name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, and we are excited to be able to share some homeschooling experiences with you who may be new to homeschooling or maybe just considering, should I be homeschooling a student who struggles? And my guest is for this interview is Laura Lee, and she is one of the Sped Homeschool team members. And Laura's going to share just some of the things she's learned at the beginning of her journey. And I'm going to just run through some questions that we're going to be using on all these interviews that we're doing. And so that we can kind of get to the core of why and how and what and how do I keep doing this and not lose my mind. So thank you, Laura, for just being here and sharing. I appreciate your willingness to do this.
Thank you. Yeah. Homeschooling is very close to my heart. So I'm really excited about it.
So I thought when we'd get started, if you could just tell us a little bit about you and your family so we can kind of get to know you. And so those that are watching can maybe, you know, cross things that are in their stories with your story.
Yeah. Well, I worked full time as a graphic designer at a curriculum publisher before my kids were born. And both my sons are special needs boys. Mm-hmm. Very different. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
My husband is a school teacher. He teaches Latin for elementary school. And so, there's a lot of, different, you know, things all connecting. And, currently I'm also getting my master's degree in special education.
Right.
Just to, help me teach my own children. I have other dreams, but that's been the main thing in getting the master's.
Yeah. So what made you dive into homeschooling? Especially, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, you've got your husband working in a school.
Right.
And you had a career. And so what were the big tugs that kind of moved you in that direction?
Well, when my husband and I were first married, I had wanted to homeschool. I had a bad school experience myself. I was picked on quite a lot. And I found out in college that I was dyslexic. And so that had not been discovered throughout school. And so it was always about work harder, work harder, work harder. And
yes,
no matter how hard I worked, I couldn't get those A's. But I did make it through school, even with that dyslexia. So it was pretty mild. But still, if I had the support, if I had it would have been different. And my husband had a great school experience. So we had talked about, we had thought, well, we're going to have genius kids anyways. We're going to homeschool. I was working at this curriculum publisher. Mm-hmm. I had a whole schedule of, they were going to learn Latin. They were going to learn Greek. They were going to be a soccer. They were going to be chess. They gonna, you know, I had the whole kindergarten through 12th grade already planned out.
Right.
What curriculum I was going to use and everything. And then my oldest was born extremely premature, a micro preemie, at 23 weeks. And he was 1 pound, 9 ounces. And he seemed to overcome those difficulties actually pretty well. There was a lot of doom and gloom when he was born about him having severe disabilities. He actually, it was a miracle. He came through it pretty well, but his language development was not normal. It's not typical. Mm-hmm. And he learned to speak, and he could say all these things very clearly, but he couldn't answer the question of what's your favorite food? What's your name? How old are you? So at 5 years old, I could ask him the questions and he just couldn't answer. He could could copy and repeat things from television shows, from videos. He could count to 100. He could actually sight read words. He couldn't answer a question. Wow. A single, like, what is that? He couldn't answer. So we had a push to get the pediatrician to give us a referral to a speech therapist. And found out that he had autism. And then later that year, we also discovered that he had visual impairment, retinopathy of prematurity. And so at first I was thinking, well, I need to send him to school because I don't know how to teach this.
Right.
But then he developed a phobia of other children. Just another child walks in the room and he was curled up in fear on the ground. So it was like, well, we can't send him to school because he's just going to be frozen in terror the whole time. So it was kind of like we went from homeschooling to not homeschooling to homeschooling to we had to do homeschooling. And so all my plans from going from kindergarten to 12th grade with Greek and Latin and all just went out the window. It was an adventure that first year. So.
But and then I know part of your story, but you sent your kids back to school and then you started homeschooling again. So can you explain that whole process? Because I think a lot of parents do that. Is we kind of go just, you know, what is good for this year? What is good for this season? And I want people to know that that's okay. And to kind of hear from your point of view, just what led to all of that.
Yeah, it is okay. And it, sometimes it can be very validating. When my son was young, I had a lot of therapists who helped me figure out how to teach him. So, and I actually even paid an ABA. We couldn't afford ABA therapy, but I paid to get some training in ABA therapy. So I was able to make it through those beginning years with advice from therapists, because a lot of those beginning years are about reading and talking and writing and just very core skills. But once I got to second grade, I was like, I don't know how to do any more than this. I got to a wall where I was like, how do I teach him farther? I don't know. And then I had my pregnancy with my youngest son and I had to be on bed rest. And so my husband just got his job at the school. They were encouraging us that they had a great SPED department, which they did. They had a good SPED department. I was very impressed with the teacher. So we decided, because I was on bed rest and because I didn't know what to do, that we'd put him into school. Well, it turns out they actually knew less of what to do than I did, because he is very complex. And every child, I mean, every disability is unique. I'm learning that with my master's. You get one child with autism, it's one child with autism. Their version of autism is different than another version of autism. Same with Down syndrome, same with cerebral palsy. So when it comes to disability, the way it manifests is unique. And this the school was not able to really understand his particular version of it, especially with the visual impairment, because he was in, he wasn't able to say, oh, I can't see that. So they assumed that he could see it because he couldn't say that. So in the 2 years he was at that school, he actually didn't progress. And I really am grateful for that. He made friends, which was validated to me because he wasn't frozen in terror with children.
That is good.
So apparently I had done something to prepare him for school.
It was very good
to know that he had learned stuff in homeschooling before, but he wasn't learning enough academically. He pretty much was frozen at second grade. And they were just about to start third grade material coming into his fifth grade. And that was silly. My youngest was born and he was born deaf. And so that was the reason why we ended up doing a second year, to give it a second try, because I had doctor's appointments, therapy appointments, and surgeries for cochlear implants. And I was like, I still can't do it. And and I think that's fine for parents to know, because there are skills that you learn in a school environment. And it's never too late to catch up. You know, that's another thing that I've had to tell parents of special needs kids over and over again. It's never too late. I hear, oh, they're so behind, they're so behind. It's never too late. With the focus attention, when you go back to homeschooling, that focus attention, they can catch up. My son is catching up back to grade level. It is possible. And so, you just do what you have to do. And, but I'm grateful going back to homeschooling because both my sons are interacting with each other. God put them in the same family for the right reason. You know, my son who's deaf, here's my oldest saying, what's that? What's that? What's that? He all hears everything. He hears everything that's outside, down the road, up in the, you know, the airplane. He hears everything. And he is actually training my youngest son to use his cochlear implants to hear, what's that? What's that? What's that? Because they want him to hear the dog outside. They want him to hear, because they want his world of hearing to expand. So they actually end up being therapies for each other.
Wow.
My oldest son has to get used to interacting with a younger, more delicate person and having some social skills and learning to read his expressions of when is he happy, when is he sad, when do I stop, when do I... They help each other. And so social skills are not just other people outside the family. It is also the family itself. So I'm very happy with homeschooling them again.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that perspective. And yes, that's amazing how we're given the right kids for each other, for us and for them. And so, yeah, that's great. You know, a lot of parents who start homeschooling, they get a lot of advice. Maybe advice they've asked for and maybe not. When you started homeschooling, whichever time or even was considering, what do you consider the best advice you were given?
Well, the best, it's kind of actually become my mantra. When my son was very young, before I started homeschooling him, I was best friends with a lady my age, who was the oldest of nine, who all had been homeschooled. Her whole family had been homeschooled. And she had told me that her father kept saying over and over again, keep the main thing the main thing. And that actually has become kind of a theme, because I had this whole elaborate plan of all the things that I wanted to teach my children. And, you know, when you have doctor's appointments and therapies and, you know, and your child's struggling to learn, and you start getting overwhelmed with all the possible things that you could teach them and all the things people say you should teach them. And they need to know this by first grade, and then and you start feeling them behind. And you just have to kind of just push everything aside and say, okay, what do they need to learn now? My son needed to learn how to answer questions. He needed to be able to hold a pencil. He needed to be able to add 2 + 2. Right. That's what we worked on. You know, science was a garden in the backyard and our fish that he helped feed every day. You know, history was stories from a storybook. I didn't test him. I didn't. That was it. Right. That was science. That was history. Everything was about language arts and math. Pretty much for the kindergarten years and for actually almost all the way to second grade. We did some crafty things. He hates coloring. crafty things. But I learned what he would do. He would do watercolor. He would do watercolor. So that worked. So, you know, we did experiment other things that were more fun. But I always came back to keep the main thing the main thing, especially when there was a crisis or, you know, life happens, you know, you just weed everything down to what's the most important things for them to learn this year.
Right. That's great. And the rest will fit in if it needs to get fit in. And, you know, and I love your approach on that of just, you know, the other stuff, make it fun. And it's still learning. It doesn't have to be so structured. That's great. So in your getting started, we all face challenges. You know, there's obstacles that we just didn't expect. Like you said, you know, you kind of had that 12-year plan that didn't quite materialize. But what was the biggest challenge you think you faced, either your child, you, your family, was starting your homeschooling journey? And how did you overcome that?
Learning about what autism was and how to teach that was huge. And there are so many books and resources out there. Yes. It is at first, like, when I would go and talk to people and ask them questions, a lot of times they would just look kind of blankly at me and I'd ask these questions. And maybe it was because I wasn't able to articulate the questions right or whatever, but just that steep curve of learning, how do I teach my child when he can't answer questions, he can't do these all the activities in the curriculum, you know, how do I weed through all of that? And there are just, I would encourage parents to just keep pushing for information, keep researching, because there are books out there. There, you can get interlibrary loans. I actually checked out college textbooks on autism to find out what is this. And one of the things that helped me was something called pivotal response therapy. You hear a lot about ABA, which is useful. The pivotal response was actually more useful to me because it was talking about the key skills that open the door for all other skills. So you focus on foundational skills like asking questions. You know, that opens the door for reading comprehension questions and history questions. And so that's the skill. So we would actually have flashcards that said, what is your name? And I'd say, my name is, you know, and my son's name. And then he would say it back to me. And we would drill these questions. How old are you? I am 5 years old. And for the next 2 years, he kept saying he was 5 years old. But we were getting there. We would drill these questions. Or I'd push him around on his bicycle. And I'd say, what is that? That is a fire hydrant. What is that? That is a door. What is it? He has conversation now. I mean, the thing is it did actually, at first I thought he's going to be like this for the rest of his life. It's not like that. When I was reading books, people learn their whole life. And they may take them longer. They may be learning into their 20s.
Good point.
You know, or even their 30s. But they learn their whole life. And you get these therapists who act like, well, if you don't do it now, they'll never change.
Right.
They learn more at the younger age. It is good to do it at a younger age. But don't feel desperate. You know, I started feeling desperate.
Great advice. Yes.
But they learn their whole life. And so the biggest challenge was learning how to teach with that disability. But there are tools out there, you know, just keep pushing to find them because it is unique for each child too. Like one child with autism is not going to learn like the other child with autism. There are tools that work for everybody, but it's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of researching. Yes. It's a lot of asking questions and pushing. Sometimes people just give you the first thing that are on their head, but if you keep asking, a lot of times they'll find something. I've had people say, you know, you keep asking about this one thing. And there was this website that came in my email. It's because that question was there. You know, I kept saying, well, how do I teach him math? Every time I bring out manipulative, he's completely distracted. I can't teach him math. And then I got some answers from therapists. So just keep pushing for those questions and those answers. It's tiring. It's exhausting. But the answers are there.
Yeah, I love that advice. That is so, so good. And parents need to hear that because it seems like every time they come to us, they're saying, well, what's the right curriculum? And it's like that curriculum is going to change their lives, change their child's lives. And yet, you've said it over and over again, your child is unique. And I love that message because it isn't as simple as just getting the right curriculum. And you have to know your child. And that was what makes you your son's best teacher.
Yes.
So true. So, you know, a lot of times we come into homeschooling and with misconceptions of just how do we effectively teach to the needs of our child? And I think you've already answered quite a few of them. but what advice do you have for other parents who really struggle in this area of, you know, I've got to let something go. And how do I do that? How do I let go of these things that either the school system has taught me is true or society has said this is how my child is going to function or somebody tested my child and said this is all they're ever going to achieve? How do you move beyond that?
Yeah, that's – and it's – there's a bit of stubbornness you have to have. I mean, it's just to be
– so true.
Even blind stubbornness. You get school teachers who think that parents are in denial. But parents are supposed to be your child's cheerleader. You're supposed to see the potential. So, you know, if they say your child will never advance beyond a third grade or eighth grade level, you're supposed to have blind optimism. That is part of your job as a parent. So, you know, it's hard, though. It's discouraging when my son has bad days and think it's never going to change. It's going to just be like this forever. But then there are days that he has such great days and he achieves so much. And I'm just, you see those flashes of brilliance that are just like, there's so much potential and you have to hold on to those. To learn what to, what to teach or how to teach. You know, there's a lot of things that teachers are stuck with that's actually 20 years old. Mm. And they yes. circulate in the homeschool world, too, a lot, like the timed readings. Mm. Research yes. actually used to say, well, a child needs to eventually get to 300 words per minute to read, to read like an adult. Research now says that the average adult doesn't even read faster than 250 words. There is actually a lot of research that's showing that these timed reading things are they're not very useful. Hmm. The thing that's useful is, do they understand what they're reading?
Exactly.
And yeah. When my son wasn't able to answer questions, a lot of times they'd say, oh, he only has a, you know, first grade reading level or, you know, very basic reading level. Hmm. But he could decode a word for sixth grade because he couldn't answer questions. So you have to follow your instincts on that.
Right.
Is he actually understanding? Can he replicate it on a felt board? Can he replicate mm-hmm. it on a timeline? So there's a lot of things where the research may say one thing, but you as a parent can you can kind of see, do they actually understand?
Right.
And it's okay to say, well, this research is not true. Because it's actually,
I love that.
To be honest, a lot of this research is not very old. Mm. SPED laws in the U.S. came about in the 70s.
Yeah.
A lot of the research on how to teach special needs kids is very, very new, very, very recent. It's okay to follow your instinct to be like, with my child, he's just going to do everything slow. If I do a timed reading, it's really not going to show me anything because he does everything slow.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it is okay as a parent to follow your instincts on, are they learning this?
Mm-hmm.
Can they somehow demonstrate that they have learned this? Whether it doesn't have to be verbally. It can be through a matching thing. It can be through a Velcro board. I do agree with testing, but not necessarily a written worksheet test. It is good to have a child demonstrate what they know so that, but you both know, do I remember what I learned, you know?
Yes.
So, I do actually believe in testing like once a week, once a month, whatever, to know what they know and for them to know what they know. But it doesn't have to be a traditional test where they fill in the blank, where they even the tests that come with your curriculum, you can rewrite it. I have often typed it in the computer
and
changed it from short answer to matching or multiple choice, or even changed it to pictures that, you know.
Right.
Just follow the instincts because you know when your child is learning. You do know.
Right. Yeah. You see those connections and you hear them talking about it, like at the dinner table, you know, telling everybody what they learned. And it's like, you don't need a test to show you as a parent, they are getting it and they're translating it and they're applying it to other places. So that's great. So you talked a little bit about felt boards and matching and pictures and things like that. What other types of like schedules, organizational strategies or teaching techniques have you found have really been just those aha, these work in our home that other parents may consider trying when they're looking at changing things up and how do I figure out how to best work with my student?
Yeah, there's a lot of really good things. Like this is called a visual schedule.
There we go.
And so we have Velcro like check marks and stuff. So It goes through what we are learning in the day, and when he's done, we put a check mark, and we do it every day.
Oh, that's great.
And that helps him know, because he's constantly quizzing me, what's next? What's next? What are we doing next?
Uh-huh.
And so it does help them. It helps the child to know that there's not the school day is not going to go indefinitely. There is an end to the day.
Right.
And also, there is kind of I'm a checklist person myself. I like to write lists of things to do, cross them out. There's kind of endorphins that come from that.
Yes, exactly.
So I'm all into that. With a lot of ABA therapy and speech therapy and all that kind of stuff, they do work a lot with visuals. I also use flashcards for Latin. I've been using Latin for roots and vocabulary to build vocabulary. We do a lot of flashcards. There are flashcards online with Quizlet that It's like a game. I love online games because they play it and they don't realize they're doing school.
Exactly.
we used to do one where he would trace the letters. It was a train. And trace the letters and make the train go around the letters. That was with IntelliJoy. And they had a few different games. That was great. We also had as a little visual that talks about what am I working towards. And a lot of times they would have a picture of his tablet. And so if he kept working and not being distracted, you get his check marks and then he'd get tablet time. We use timers because I found that he could take multiple hours to do math.
Right.
And both by the time an hour was done, both he and I were in tears. We were just, so I got to a point where it's like, okay, we are going to do math for this long and that's it. If it gets done, it doesn't, it, whatever.
Right.
We're going to do it for this long, but it also helps him work because he sees the timer is going and he's not going to sit there forever. Like the whole idea of just sitting here forever with this one assignment just freezes some kids. And that my son was like that, where it just, he would just stop working. So, and we also, let me grab this real quick. This is a brain break dice. This way.
Cool.
So, after 10 minutes, because he has attention problems, he would roll the brain break dice. This says hop for 10 seconds, hop like a frog for 10 seconds, walk like a robot. This is his favorite, spin for 10 seconds. Actually, both kids love to spin until they're dizzy. and it kind of breaks up the day. And when things start getting serious, getting frustrated, you're starting to just want to yell. And why can't you focus?
Right.
It breaks it up. You do something silly. You're both laughing. Mm-hmm. You get back to work and you can start over again.
Right. And so those are concrete. They're not like
very short. Some people can do it at 20 or 30 or in between tasks, but it really helps break up the day, and making sure that you have breaks throughout the day is huge. You know, don't just do a block of 4 hours of school. It's hard. It's hard to do that.
Too much. Yes, exactly. That's some great advice. Yeah. I love all that. That's, they seem simple, but yet we don't think about them because they require us to look beyond the curriculum that we often buy to insert some things that are necessary for our student to find success. And so thank you just for sharing from your wealth of information, Lauren. I'm sure as you continue teaching your kids, you'll continue learning more, as you will, the parents that are watching. We just want to encourage you. Do you have any closing remarks, just encouragement to the parents that are watching, that just that you can share?
Yeah, it's worth it. It is really, I mean, homeschooling is hard. You know, anybody who has done it for a little while will tell you it is hard because you're a parent and teacher. And if you're a teacher, you can kind of separate yourself a little bit. But as a parent, you want your child to succeed. And that emotion makes it very hard because you want your child to do well. You want them to excel. And it is very, very hard. But it's so worth it. And there's so many good memories that I actually make a yearbook at the end of every year.
That's cool.
With pictures of what we've done and field trips and different. And looking through these, realize this is irreplaceable. Like the experiences, the time we spend together as a family.
Yeah.
Every bit of effort is worth it. It is worth it. And sometimes it is good to take a break, to sit back and be like, you know, I feel like I'm going to pop because I'm so frustrated, but going back to the main thing, it is worth it. It is worth it.
Yeah. So agree. It definitely is. And so, thanks for sharing, Laura. This has been awesome. I know it's going to be an encouragement to those who are watching. And we just want to keep encouraging you. And that's what our organization, Sped Homeschool, is all about. And so so definitely, you know, just continue digging into resources. Like Laura said, use the advice she gave you, whatever resonated with your heart. I want you to pursue that. And if you're feeling called to homeschool, just know that there's resources out there for you. One of them is our website, spedhomeschool.com. You can check out all of our articles written by team members, written by people that organizations we partner with. And we have an amazing library of articles as well as videos on our YouTube channel. So definitely check those out. But thanks again, Laura. Appreciate you sharing your story and just all the wisdom you have to share. And just thank you for your time. But thank you for watching, and thank you, Bookshark, for giving us this opportunity to share. So bye, everybody.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
And we're hosts of the Kainos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in everyday settings.
The word kainos means new, and that's exactly what we want to do on our podcast, bring something new from what is old in our faith.
And on this show, you might hear us explore topics like what the Bible has to say about student loan forgiveness, discuss how the Satanic Temple affects our view of religious liberty in America, or even question why is it that so many people are having rapture anxiety.
To learn more about the podcast, go to lifeaudio.com.